According to the famed Greek writer Pausanias, the maxim, "Know thyself," was one of three Delphic sayings inscribed over the entrance of the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. Said to be the most revered center of oracular wisdom and healing in the ancient Greek world. Similarly, Sri Ramana Maharishi, one of the great Indian sages of the 20th century who was known for his capacity to instruct and awaken without a single word being spoken, invariably recommended self-inquiry, the question, "Who am I?" as the sole path to enlightenment. This equivalence of self-knowledge with the highest form of spiritual knowledge, of the human temple as the fountain source of all the mysteries of nature, is a thread common to many religious and spiritual traditions throughout history. Today, a thoughtful person would likely start with modern science for an answer to the question, "Who am I?" But here we find the predominating viewpoint largely materialistic and captive to a rather narrow and mechanistic interpretation of Darwinism. In this worldview, humanity is soulless, a fortuitous concurrence of atoms arising out of a primordial soup and evolving into our present state via random variation and natural selection. Despite enormous gaps in the fossil record and many other anomalies, we are asked to accept this as an adequate explanation for the tremendous diversity and complexity of successful life forms on the planet, as well as for the emergence of human self-consciousness and human culture out of simian culture. While modern science has enormous value in explaining and predicting empirical events according to quantitative mathematical laws, many of the most brilliant scientists readily admit the many questions it leaves unapproached. For example, just because science currently has no third-person means of detecting consciousness outside of the neural activity of the physical brain, that certainly does not justify the conclusion that the human mind has a biological origin. When venturing into metaphysical premises such as this, materialistic science is forced to ignore the countless, extensively documented parapsychological experiences which undermine their validity. On the other hand, although it has become considerably more diverse and eclectic, the predominating religious view regarding human nature in Western nations is also unjustifiably narrow. In the Orthodox Abrahamic view, a new soul is created by God at each human birth, and a single lifetime determines whether that soul will spend eternity in heaven or hell. This too, Theosophy points out, is not only illogical, but encourages a sense of separateness, a desire for personal salvation, and a fear of death. It also stifles the search for rational understanding. For example, given the tremendous disparity in the circumstances of human birth, of inherent traits, environment, and opportunity, what just God would require eternity to be determined by one short life? When combined with the doctrine of vicarious atonement, that is, simply by confessing one's sins, they can be wiped away, the Orthodox viewpoint also undermines our sense of responsibility for our actions here on earth, that somehow we can escape them. That is, instead of encouraging, it undermines ethics and morality, which are fundamentally crucial to spiritual growth. Whether a person can properly articulate it or not, everyone has had moments of deep clarity and insight that transcend anything they have been taught by the so-called experts of religion or science. In such moments, we may glimpse, however momentarily, an immortal essence behind all the changes. We know we are not limited by the body and brain, nor are we entirely constrained by our own afflictive emotions, hopes, fears, and anxieties. We may glimpse something of the deeper meaning behind the external flow of events, or sense the reality of a more profound purpose to human experience than the finite mind can normally grasp. And even a brief encounter with what is called soul memory can transform a lifetime, as many great yogis and saints have attested. Such glimpses of the transcendent genius behind the veil are also reflected in the great breakthroughs of science and mathematics, philosophy and poetry, music and the arts. The rishis of ancient India are among those who saw clearly this critical distinction between the divine, immortal, and noetic planes of life versus the mortal, volatile, and physical. They understood the higher as threefold and the lower as fourfold. This is why, in the Rig Veda, for example, the spiritual sun is spoken of as composed of seven rays. In the late 1800s, H.P. Blavatsky explained that this sevenfold division is not only a core teaching of Eastern philosophy, but has been confirmed by countless generations of enlightened seers and adepts, and is central to the esoteric system of nearly every great religious and philosophical tradition known to history. If the sevenfold division is properly understood, she explained, and used as a basis for study, it will help to show the common substrate behind the great traditions of the past, and will also provide a crucial foundation for the sciences of the future, an invaluable aid in understanding all aspects of evolution, of human psychology and experience. Most importantly, if assimilated and applied, it will serve the purposes of the great brotherhood of bodhisattvas. It will help to guide and awaken humanity in this age of transition, at the great crossroads and transformations of human culture we are now facing, and in the collective initiations of the human race to come, by means of which universal concord and mutual service will become the proper basis of the civilizations of the future. In geometry, the two simplest space-enclosing constructions possible, other than the circle, are those of the triangle and the square, the three-sided and the four. By what happy coincidence, we might ask, is each human being also composed of a three and a four, an immortal solar triad and a mortal lunar square? The triad is the birthless and deathless Buddha nature within, our inner God, the Christos, or hero in man, as George William Russell referred to it, the innately compassionate and sacrificial spiritual and moral genius within each of us, and the source of true wisdom wherever it has manifest in human culture. The lower quaternary is that which composes the human personality, the mortal vestures of repeated incarnations, the temporary actor on the stage of earthly life. The highest or seventh principle of human nature is called Atma, a word meaning self or spirit. But this is not the personal I or self that most of us refer to. Rather, it is the impersonal, universal spirit, omnipresent and boundless, and ought not to be called, in truth, a human principle at all. While it is neither male nor female, Jesus called it the Father in secret. It is no individual property of any person, wrote HPB, but the divine essence, a unity with no body and no form, which does not exist and yet is, as the Buddhists say of Nirvana. Called the real, the absolute, or tat in the Upanishads, it is said to be identical with Brahman, or Parabrahm, the one witness which is beyond the coming and going of universes. When all ignorance is destroyed, wrote Shankaracharya, Atma reveals itself like the sun when every cloud has dispersed. It is also called the highest truth, without bound or limitation, without polarity or hint of differentiation. It is called the rootless root of all forms of consciousness, matter, and energy. While it appears as void, unconsciousness, and utter darkness to the finite mind, it becomes a boundless plenum, absolute light, and absolute consciousness to the awakened seer or sage. What seems as night to most human beings, says Krishna, is as day to the gaze of the self-governed sage. Each human being, no matter how depraved, unconsciously returns to that primal, boundless spiritual reality each night in deep, dreamless sleep, providing true nourishment and regeneration for the soul without which it could not go on. Buddhi, the sixth principle, is called the vehicle of Atma and is likened to a mirror reflecting absolute bliss. As a cosmic principle, Buddhi is connected with universal latent ideation, the highest alaya akasha, called Daivi Prakriti, the light of the Logos. In the secret doctrine, this oceanic spiritual light is the synthetic aggregate of the boundless wisdom and compassion of the Dhyani Buddhas, the primeval differentiations arising within that light. As a human principle, Blavatsky called it the spiritual soul, intuitive omniscience, and divine conscience, the faculty of discrimination between good and evil, and the storehouse of the collective wisdom of the ages. In Vedanta philosophy, it is called the Anandamaya Kosha, the sheath of bliss. But as the term implies, that reflection is still a temporary manifestation, though universal and spiritual, and therefore not yet free from maya, illusion, or ignorance. Only in conjunction with Atma does Buddhi properly reflect divine omniscience. And only in conjunction with manas, its emanation, does it become a discrete and active, rather than a latent and passive, principle. Thus, the immortal human monad is said to be a triad, the three-in-one of Atma, Buddhi, Manas. Manas is a Sanskrit word referring to the vast planes of mentality, the principle of self-conscious thought and awareness, which makes of the two higher spiritual principles cognizing, perceiving, and therefore potentially active in relation to the lower kingdoms of nature. Cosmically, manas is linked with mahat or mahabuddhi, universal divine intelligence and divine thought, emanating from the most noumenal to the phenomenal, impressing itself upon each descending plane as the laws of nature. In humanity, it is the mysterious individual fifth principle, the human soul, quote, a drop of the ocean of immortality, unquote, which begins to awaken at the midpoint of each great cycle of evolution to undertake a vast cycle of periodic reincarnations for purposes of learning and experience. This awakening also marks the beginning of individual responsibility, choice, self-direction, and self-correction. Higher manas is also called the sutratma, or thread soul, for it provides the undying continuity by means of which the essence of wisdom garnered from each life is preserved like pearls upon a string. At each incarnation, higher manas emits a ray, which descends into the fourfold earthly vestures, animating a given personality acquired under karmic law. Fully developed, manas is that which bridges eternity and time, heaven and earth, the boundless archetypal truths to their timely manifestation in thought, word, and deed, thus dispensing and infusing the healing balm of moral law and spiritual intelligence into every form of human activity. Human nature reunites with divine nature, as it did in the case of Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, and many other great teachers and reformers. It is by this means that all sentient life is redeemed. Both humanity and the lower kingdoms are benefited, elevated, and prepared for the next great cycle. Unfortunately, in most human beings, the higher immortal centers are almost entirely dormant. Only a minute fraction of the boundless capacities of manas are utilized in any given life, and too often used on behalf of personal benefit only, the evil genius rather than the divine guardian and illuminator of human life. In this sense, the entire path may be summarized as the process whereby this higher triad is reawakened and activated. Because the higher triad is that which unites us with the highest purposes and forces in all of nature, their full and proper awakening cannot occur except on behalf of all, in order to benefit all. This is why, from the beginning, all selfish or self-seeking ambitions must be renounced in favor of altruism and theophilanthropy. Such altruism is known as bodhicitta in Northern Buddhism, the wish to gain enlightenment solely in order to relieve the suffering of others. This brings us to a discussion of the fourth principle in human nature, that of kama, or desire. Like all other human principles, the fourth has its origin in a cosmic principle, that of divine eros, universal love, called Kamadeva in the Vedas, quote, that desire which first arose in it, unquote, that which first propelled the unmanifest to manifest. On the human plane, desire is the basis of action, called the mover of the will, and is that beneficent intent which originally brought us into incarnation. When dropped on earth, however, it is said the lotus seed becomes buried in mire, while the initial descent of manas into earthly vestures marked a golden age for all humanity. The subsequent development of reason and sensation on the lower astral and material planes also resulted in an obscuration of our primordial spiritual qualities and perceptions. Theosophy teaches that the natural feeling of unity and devotion to our preceptors and to all other beings was overtaken by devotion to a separative sense of self. Divine love was converted to corporeal passion, called in Buddhism tanha, thirst for life, that which keeps us magnetically bound to earthly attractions. Debased by self-interest, human nature thus operates unregulated by natural law and becomes blind and destructive. In order to reverse this polarity, higher desires must be consciously cultivated and continuously nourished. Thought must be, quote, kept up to pitch, wrote W.Q. Judge, by a profound desire to rise. Quote, even a Buddha or a Jesus had first to make a vow, which is a desire, in some life, that he would save the world or some part of it, and to persevere with a desire alive in his heart through countless lives, unquote. This, apparently, is the key to purifying and transforming the fourth principle, personal will into universal will. Through the purification of motive, human nature begins to tap a boundless reservoir of soul force. The Sanskrit word prana means breath, life wind, or life force. Though designated as the third sheath in the human constitution, it too is a universally pervasive principle, referring to, quote, the active power producing all phenomena, unquote. Judge calls it the vitality inherent in all matter and its aspect as force. In relation to our solar system, it has its origin in the sun and is likened to an invisible electromagnetic ocean in which the Earth floats, permeating the globe and every being on it, unceasingly pulsating against, around, and through us. Nowhere can any creature lose its benefit, nor escape its final crushing power. In order for it to work properly through the physical body, however, it requires a vehicle, a specialized instrument or form called the astral body, the second principle of human nature. Everything physical has its corresponding astral form, also called the linga sharira, meaning design body, because it provides the ethereal architecture for the more material life atoms to build upon. The astral body is a self-luminous electromagnetic form of tremendous tensile strength, which carries the true organs of sensation and action, and is therefore said to be the true personal man. It permeates the physical, but can be consciously or unconsciously extracted and act independently of it. By example, it is the vesture utilized in many dream experiences. The astralite is also called the, quote, great picture gallery of eternity, unquote, and the memory of God, for it carries an exact record of every visible and invisible event in the most minute of detail of this and every past life, as well as the entire history of the great globe itself. It is the instrument by which the adept can see and know all that is, has been, or is to come. Not only can he or she view and examine the past lives of others, as well as what is currently in their hearts and minds, but can also hear and see what is passing in the mind of an ant. The astral is the means of all telepathy, clairvoyance, and clairaudience, and asserts itself in the phenomena of psychometry and mesmerism, what was once known as the healing art of magnetism. All of these faculties, hidden sciences, and arts, wrote Judge, will be humanity's possession in the future and would be ours today were it not for past misuse, blind dogmatism, selfishness, and materialistic unbelief. There are also many yet unknown dangers connected with the astral, called the Hall of Learning in The Voice of the Silence. It is a realm of probation, it's said, that all must consciously pass through in order to reach the Hall of Wisdom. But only those armed with a perfectly pure motive and highly developed powers of discrimination can do so, for it is a realm of perfidious beauty and intoxication, with numberless false lights which can trap the unwary psyche in whirlpools of delusion. Every purely personal thought and feeling, says Judge, every half-conscious, self-serving impulse, motivation, or desire that we allow to enter the mind instantly creates affinities with entities and elementals in the astral light. The greater the intensity and frequency, the greater the rebound and enslavement. H.P. Blavatsky called this aspect of the astral light, quote, the great terrestrial crucible, in which the vile emanations of humanity, moral and physical, are all converted into their subtlest essence and radiated back, intensified, thus becoming epidemics, moral, psychic, and physical. Mr. Judge explained, because the civilization of the present day is selfish to the last degree and built on the personal element, the masters have determined that the rules for the development of psycho-astral faculties shall not be given out except through initiation to those who have proven themselves free of that self-interest which would invert them. The physical body, called anamaya kosha, or sheath of food in Sanskrit, is the most dense, transitory, and illusory of the seven principles. But it too harbors many mysteries yet to be discovered. Chemistry and physiology, wrote HPB, are two magicians of the future which are destined to open the eyes of mankind to great physical truths. For the physical vesture, too, is a microcosmic reflection of the macrocosm, made up of countless infinitesimal lives, indissolubly bound to the one life, forever whirling and merging together, forced forward by the pranic currents. The human temple is never for a moment the same. We are constantly throwing off and attracting to ourselves the life atoms which compose the physical sheath, and which undergo a complete alteration every 7 years. The quality of the elementals we attract is determined by our line of life's meditation, by every thought, emotion, feeling, and act, including the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat. We are therefore urged to govern the palate by the dictates of temperance, nutrition, and morality, which will least clog the body and brain, and which will have the smallest effect in hampering the development of intuition. But the purest of diets will not in itself create true health or wholeness. For many people, the physical form is the center of identity and worship, making it a tomb or prison, rather than the sacred though temporary vehicle for the fulfillment of duty and service. From all this, we can see why it is said that a Copernican revolution is needed. The inner life must be nourished by high thinking, by a recentering of identity in the higher triad, in the Sun of Truth, and the Self of All, through a noetic embrace of universal ideals and aspirations, thereby unlocking the sympathies of the heart to include all humanity and all beings. When done, it is said, in conjunction with the study of the philosophy and the cultivation of inner and outer virtue, over a 7-year period, this effort will purify the pranic winds of all the vestures, transforming the entire ladder, increasing its porosity to divine influence and divine light. In doing so, it will gradually awaken our intuitive awareness of the ever-wakeful, invisible guardians and guides of the human race who ceaselessly serve the cause of universal enlightenment, who nourish and help sustain all beings with their beneficent ideation, and whose every breath is a means of bestowing benefit. Though the enlightenment which they embody cannot be reached in one short life, Theosophy affirms that each and every human being can make authentic reforms and beginnings in spiritual self-regeneration, and by doing so can begin to contribute to aid and uplift the arc of true progress for all. Thank you.